Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Monkey Tennis?
Says
Monkey Tennis?
You're a packing.
This is an ecstasy pellet.
Google it! Monkey Tennis?
Basically, beef tea.
Monkey Tennis?
Or what is a trolley man but a shepherd of the town?
Monkey Tennis?
The better, more sought-after broadcaster. Seldom a pedigree chump. Although he only eats boiled eggs.
Monkey Tennis?
Hello, pod fans. It's the Monkey Tennis crew here.
Hello!
What you're about to hear is a special episode all about Alan Partridge's Scissored Isle. We recorded it live on stage at MCM Comic Con in Manchester earlier in the year.
Yeah.
And as we go on, you will hear that we were somewhat crunched for time.
Yeah, I think on reflection, we agreed trying to cover a 45-minute special in about 40 minutes on stage made it slightly difficult to cover all the points that we wanted to go through.
It's ambitious madness, isn't it?
We like to challenge ourselves at Monkey Tennis, and this was certainly a challenge.
But what we've decided
that,
to do...
That almost makes it sound bad. It was great. We nailed it, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Was,
and oh, thanks very much to everyone at MCM Comic Con for having us. We had a lovely old time.
It was great, yeah.
But what we've decided to do is throw in a Scissored Isle Part 2, which will be coming your way next week, featuring all the tidbits that we didn't have time for on stage. So we will be doing that next week. But right now, we'd like to pass over to our past selves on stage in Manchester.
Alan Partridge, Scissored Isle.
Hello, Manchester. Next up on this stage, a live recording of Monkey Tennis, the chart-topping Alan Partridge fan podcast, described by The Telegraph as one of the best TV and film podcasts, and by commenters on the Comic-Con Facebook page as "What is this absolute horseshite?", "Crap," and "What the fuck is this shit?" Undeterred, earlier today we spoke to some Comic-Con attendees who had all definitely heard of us and told us they were literally desperate for a front row seat with almost no prompting.
Sorry, Monkey what? Monkey who?
Oh, I will absolutely be down the front row at 3:15. That's when Chris Parry's on, right?
What? Looking forward to what? I don't understand.
I don't know what you're talking about, mate.
Thank you for joining us to discuss, dissect and celebrate Norfolk's finest broadcaster, Alan Partridge, in his mission to Manchester as he attempts to make amends in his 2016 special Scissored Isle. Hoping to become better, humbler, more sought-after podcasters, please make a moderate to large amount of noise for the hosts of Monkey Tennis.
Monkey Tennis?
You better believe it, babe. There's a new chat in town.
Monkey tennis?
Ice white shoes, ice white socks with navy blue double cadet stripe.
Aha!
Monkey tennis?
I've just been told that Roger Moore is at Chiswick Roundabout.
Monkey tennis?
Oh, what the heck? Rock and roll, let's all have a pair!
Monkey tennis?
Yes, I am in a jacuzzi sipping spunt. And on that bombshell,
monkey tennis.
Hello, Manchester. Thank you so much for coming down.
Hi.
Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. For those of you that have never listened to the podcast before, we basically tackle Alan projects one at a time, dissecting, discussing, and celebrating. And it's fantastic to be in Manchester, not only Steve Coogan's home turf, but also the setting for the episode we're going to talk about today, Alan Partridge's Scissored Isle. The BAFTA-winning Alan Partridge's Scissored Isle.
It is.
I was surprised when you said BAFTA-winning, to be honest. I've got to be honest.
don't do it a disservice.
I'm going off script. Carry on.
Stick to the script.
No script.
So, this is basically an episode where Alan is desperate to make amends after a social faux pas. It's produced by the Pear Tree Factual Productions, which is presumably the documentary wing of Alan.
Yes, also the fictional production company that produced Places of My Life. So, a few years previous.
So it makes documentaries, but just the ones Alan wants, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And only two.
Yeah, and he did have a production company that he liquidated voluntarily.
Correct.
But what, is this a new venture?
Quite possibly. Before I go any further, though, let's briefly introduce ourselves. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
I'd achieved the holy grail of being able to chat and scan.
Nick Holder.
He only eats boiled eggs.
And Tom Stab.
I live here, it's my house.
So, Scissored Isle. For starters, I thought I'd look up whether there's actually a Pear Tree Productions, and it turns out there's not just one, but several. There's a Mississippi-based production company owned by a man called Kevin Partridge. Coincidence? I think so.
That's amazing. Is that true?
That's true. And obviously, with the Facebook page of that company, you would expect it to be overrun by Partridge fans. But no, the first review reads, Pear Tree Productions is an A-plus operation. Kevin is insightful, professional, and doesn't call rap until his client is completely happy. He is my go-to for all video production. But then the next comment reads, can you fingerprint a sausage? So at that point, the Alan fans had arrived.
Took it over. Yeah,
written by Alan in Norwich.
Yeah. Alan would absolutely call time as well when he was done. He wouldn't be prepared to go the extra mile, would he?
Nope. So this opens on quite a somber tone. You can tell mainly because Alan's cardigan is done up to the top button.
Yeah, he looks very serious. And also, he opens with the line, the footages of a man that I don't recognise. I'd just like to say at this point, I absolutely recognise Alan.
Yeah.
This is classic Alan up to his usual tricks.
Should we talk about quickly, so this was broadcast on the 28th of April 2016 on Sky Atlantic. What do we reckon the viewing figures were for this? Anyone care to speculate?
Atlantic? I'd say small.
I reckon maybe 500,000.
I believed I'd read somewhere it was actually around 100,000, but that seems crazy low.
Wow, that is low.
It's Sky Atlantic low. Well, I was keeping quiet there because I actually do know what the viewing figures actually were.
Do tell.
And interestingly, Stab, your guess was quite close. 532,000. So, yeah, 500,000 basically.
Pretty good.
Have we got any context for that, or was that just...
I think it's better than Mid Morning Matters did on Sky.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Is this also the first sort of Partridge product to not have any involvement from Armando Iannucci as well?
I think so. This is just Coogan and Gibbons'
product,
isn't it? One thing I noted about this is Steve Coogan back on the prosthetics and makeup on this one? Because obviously in Alpha Papa, he said that he's now old enough to look like Alan's age, but in this one, he looks pretty haggard.
I think that's just his real haggardness.
Is it?
I don't think there's definitely no prosthetics going on there.
Okay.
No.
So at this point, he's talking about the comments that he's made as crass and offensive. He's a more self-aware Partridge. He does realise that he's made a mistake, although it does then go on to seem like he's effectively just made this whole documentary to make himself more employable.
Yeah, well, of course.
We should probably explain what happened. So Alan's basically in an editing room, and as you can see, there's a kind of TV monitor behind him, and essentially it cuts to a scene where Alan is chatting to some youths, and in his words, very much on their level, i.e. he's very much not on their level.
And he's just played the Funky Gibbon by the goodies.
Yep. And then one of the youths accuses him of bestial filth, at which point he goes absolutely berserk.
Yeah. Well, he says bestial filth, but that kid literally just made a sheep noise, didn't he? Alan forced him to elaborate.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he does call him a sheep shagger, just to be clear on that point.
Unforgivable.
That does happen.
And then, Alan goes... absolutely insane. So it starts describing, imagining your hot balls pushed up against its woolly back. And then obviously brands the youngster a chav.
Yep.
I thought that was a term that was dying out by this point last year. So I looked on Google Trends, as any usual adult would do. And it turns out actually more people are searching for chav now than they ever have in the past.
Maybe that's because of a Scissored Isle.
Possibly. It's still a political hot potato.
Well, I found out that in 2006, there was a survey commissioned by YouGov that suggested that 70% of TV industry professionals believed that the character Vicky Pollard was an accurate representation of white working class people as chubby. Great research there, Nick.
Professional. Wow, okay. I am stunned.
Would anyone like to hazard a guess as out of on Google whether chav or Alan Partridge is the more searched for term?
Ooh.
Chav.
I'm going chav, yeah.
Any guesses from the audience? Are we saying chav or are we saying Alan?
Chav.
Okay, well, congratulations. You're all right. But
yes.
Around Alpha Papa coming out, Partridge did enjoy a leap over the term chav for a very brief holiday.
A holiday above the chavs.
Alan's second mistake was whilst presenting the Mr. Golf 2016 award. I wondered if that was loosely based on some things like that chap from Cheers who did the racist stand-up heckling routine.
Oh, yeah.
Or Mike Reed's UKIP Calypso.
Who could forget?
Yeah.
People are actually laughing at his after-dinner speech, though. It seems to be going down quite well, which is quite rare for Alan.
Yeah, I think they're very much on his level. They're his people.
Right.
Yeah.
But he realises it's being filmed and it's going to get out because he turns to the person next to him and says, I think a shitstorm's coming my way.
Like, so just to explain for those that haven't seen it, so at the golf club dinner, he uses the chav term again, essentially accidentally, but then embellishes it and says, you come here to get away from the chavs. So he makes it worse. And yeah, somebody's been filming it and it goes viral.
It does go viral.
Can you remember how many views it's had according to it going viral?
Oh, wasn't it something ridiculous like 700?
150.
No, yeah. It's 150. That's viral. Yeah.
And he's labelled ignorant, prejudiced, because somebody can't spell on YouTube, and hateful. But what I love is obviously, as you can see, well, those of you here can see on the screen behind us, his erstwhile assistant, Lynn Benfield, crops up, seemingly has signed up for a YouTube account just to defend him online.
Yeah, so there are a series of screenshots of the YouTube comments and Lynn jumping to his defence every time with
leave him alone,
leave him be, only God can smite him. And then, and then you can see here somebody threatens to put up a video of him getting changed as revenge porn, and Lynn asks, what is revenge porn?
She also hasn't given herself a profile picture. Absolute noob error.
That's
there.
What you'd expect.
And around this point, his sponsors abandoned him. Remember all the sponsors?
Chaucer's Country Kitchen.
They're gone.
Yep. They're not real either, I did check.
Yep. NPP Escrow, gone. United Farm and Animal Feed, wanted to reduce
fee.
So he's in trouble.
Yeah, so it's not going well, and Alan describes this as the lowest point in his career. I was thinking to myself, how can this be the lowest point of his career? He did shoot a man live on air. Would that not be the lowest point of
and
his
someone
career?
Dropped a dead cow on him as
and
well.
And probably just his career being so bad that he's depressed and drives to Dundee in his bare feet.
Yep. It's just another,
definitely more of a low point.
It's another low in a series of lows, isn't it, basically?
Yep. But I think arguably Alan's career is doing okay around this time.
Yeah, if
he's doing successful after-dinner speeches. He's got the Mid-Morning Masses show.
He's got sponsors.
He's bounced back. That's what I'm saying.
So he starts talking about how this perhaps is representative of a chasm between the haves and have-nots or haven'ts of the UK. And he decides that this is an idea for a thoughtful documentary.
And he kind of poses the question, he's saying, like, was I to blame or society?
I think Alan was to blame, wasn't he?
Yeah, the answer's clear.
To use his words, he decides he's going to... it's going to be a uniquely insightful documentary format and a journey of redemption.
He also says that he hopes to become a better man, but also, perhaps more importantly, a better, more sought-after broadcaster.
Yeah, I think that's the bit to really pay attention to there, isn't it?
So is the reality here that he's essentially blown up an easily forgotten mishap in order to get another hour of himself on telly?
Yes.
100%.
Nailed it.
And then... under the voiceover, when he's talking about a uniquely insightful documentary format, you have him jumping over a gate in a field as part of the introduction credits. And I thought, that's a younger Alan than we've ever seen before, like physically
I think he wants to prove to those potential employers that, you know, he's not the
He can do it all.
He can do it all. Yeah. Action, Alan.
One of the great things about this, about Scissored Isle, as opposed to anything Alan's done before, is that because the concept is that the whole documentary is produced and edited by him, there's a lot of Alan in the way it's cut and the way credits appear and things like that, and the hashtags that are used that you obviously didn't get on things like I'm Alan Partridge or Know Me Knowing You. One is that obviously, he jumps over the gate and he more or less clears it, but...
You hear him go, no, as he lands.
It tells you two things about Alan. One, how many takes were there of that where he absolutely stacked it into the gate? And also, when he finally does it, he doesn't absolutely clear it, but leaves it in the documentary because he's probably hurt himself by that point. Have we got Alan's full credit list?
Oh,
he's not just the presenter.
Yeah, he. Shall I go through it?
Go through it.
He is the presenter. He's the producer. He's the executive producer, and he's the co-director. Interestingly, not listed as a director though.
No, he's a co-director.
So who did he co-direct it with?
Exactly, it's not listed.
We'll never know.
Probably just a typo. So then we cut to Alan's rather salubrious digs, to use his terms.
Yep.
Denton Abbey.
Lovely name. Well, two things that kind of come off this. One, that house is genuinely massive. How's he got the money to afford that? And secondly, Denton Abbey, whilst obviously it's witty, it's humorous, isn't that the surname of Sidekick Simon?
It is.
Ooh,
yes.
I didn't notice that.
Yep. Yeah, but also, more importantly, Denton is half an hour outside of Manchester, where we are now. So, and he did say, in relation to the size of his house, the mortgage did, and I quote, cripple him.
Yeah, so that's how he's got that house. And I did wonder, is Denton either, it's a reference to Denton 5 miles away from where we are now, or is it a play on words with Downton? Is he trying
to
have a Downton?
It's a bit of both,
isn't it? Yeah, I think
that's
so.
That's the joke, there's some indication that someone's trying to take the house away from him as well. He's very adamant that it is his house. His name is on the deeds.
Is it Carol?
There are a few references to Carol in this, aren't there?
So maybe it is. Maybe she's back. Who ran off with a narcissistic sports pimp.
Yeah, looks like yellow stuff in tins.
Yeah, he's an idiot.
Mm-hmm. Alan basically decides to head into Manchester to try and make sense of this schism between the haves and have-nots, haven'ts. Manchester described by Alan as the spiritual home of the needy.
He also refers to it as one of Britain's most deprived areas. I can't stress enough, those are Alan's words, not
ours.
Not our words.
I would also say, to back up the people of Manchester, I looked up the GDP per capita of cities of the UK. You are number three.
Pretty good. Congrats. Well done, guys. You're nailing it. Did you take note of the imagery he uses to depict the people of Manchester?
What, shots of Kevin from Corrie and Mick Hucknall, you mean?
Yeah, that's it. That's all you need. Those two. Representative.
Again, I looked up Mick Hucknall because my mum was a big Simply Red fan and he was popular. I can clarify that he has sold over 50 million records. Has Alan sold 50 million of anything? I don't think so.
No way.
And is it your mum that's a Simply Red fan, or is it you?
Let's not go too far down that path.
Mr. Crowded House and Deacon Blue there.
Just write great hits.
He also describes Manchester's teeming gay and lesbian scene. And coincidence or otherwise, the arrival of the BBC in Salford, obvious bit of homophobia, but also still quite bitter towards the BBC.
Basically thinks the BBC are to blame for any, like, I guess, the development of more left-field liberal culture.
Yep. There's an outside shot of the car where Alan tells us he's brought his best friend along. I was sure it would be Michael, who obviously allegedly died in Alpha Papa. But no, he's replaced Michael with a dog called Seldom. Question to the group.
There he is.
Would you rather have Michael or Seldom as your best friend?
Ooh, Seldom.
Yeah, I think Seldom's going to be a lot more reliable.
I'm the lone voice for a human best friend.
Although apparently Seldom only eats boiled eggs. I wasn't sure whether you should feed a dog boiled eggs. It doesn't sound good. So
I don't think that's Alan's choice. He only eats boiled eggs.
Yeah, that's Seldom. Seldom
saying
that.
Yes, okay, well, I'm
saying it.
I was worried for Seldom, so I did look on Google, can dogs eat boiled eggs? And the answer is yes, and they can also eat the shells of eggs, equally healthy. But in terms of the other predictive searches that Google gave me, second was, can I give my dog ice cream? The answer is yes, but not chocolate or raisin. And then the third search was, can I give my dog gravy? I didn't investigate any further than that.
I would say yes, that's fine.
I would say you've over-investigated as it is, to be fair.
I was going to say, as you can see from the picture we've got behind us here, Seldom is in Alan's, I think it's a Jeep he's got, and he's not wearing a seatbelt. And I thought, well, that looks...
irresponsible.
I'm worried that Seldom's not safe there. So I did think, is there such a thing as a dog seatbelt, perhaps? And I think we can show you the evidence now. That,
yes, there is.
Yes, there is. There are several of those available on the market. Oh,
definitely bottom left.
Look at him.
So we must rattle on. We find out at this point that he's been having anxiety dreams about being stuck in a lift with Diane Abbott, at which point the hashtag Diane Abbott comes up on the screen. Made even more funny, as everybody pretty much knows that Coogan is an ardent Labour supporter.
Yeah.
And then he talks about back in the day when people in Manchester would have cushy jobs in mills and factories for mum, dad and the kids. It must have seemed like the good times would never end. But then
China happened.
And there's a great bit when they have like some archive footage of a load of kind of Victorian kids outside a factory going, yay. And then
factory work.
They just put in a voice to go, factory work.
Also, when he says like China happened, it makes it sound like it was like an invention in the early noughties. It's been around forever. He also gives specific products as examples of what China produces: plastic water pistols and dildos. Although he does show Barbie
the big
dolls
two.
When he says dildos.
Yeah, dildos are not depicted. Mm. So I had a question to the group. Mm-hmm. Has anyone here ever done factory work?
Nope.
Afraid not. My hands are clean.
Well, I have. I once worked in a sandwich factory during a summer holiday time, and I can tell you the actual job itself was fine, but a bit of scandal here. They would produce prawn mayonnaise sandwiches and reduced fat prawn mayonnaise sandwiches, but they didn't change the mayo.
Bombshell. Expose. Call watchdog.
Name and shame.
Well, it's closed down now. I don't
hope
know
for
if
your sake there's no reporters in the room, because the whistleblowing on that level is blowing my mind.
Yeah.
At this point, we are in Tesco. That is Alan's first port of call, which he describes as a supermarket.
Yeah.
Probably the silliest joke of the programme is when he's defining it for the audience as who doesn't know what a supermarket is.
This is exactly what I was thinking. He kind of talks and acts as if he's never heard of what a supermarket is or Tesco.
He's probably pretending because he's above that. He just gets it delivered by Ocado.
Describes right it choice. As a place that you can buy cheese, chops, chocks, cheap chicken, chicory and chives. That joke would have been better if he stopped after the word chicken, wouldn't it? But once he's thinking about things beginning with chur, he just can't stop himself.
So my question to the group, has anyone else worked in a supermarket apart from me?
Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep,
I mean,
I think we'll have.
Produce.
Tills and trolleys. I was the Carl of my day. We'll get on to Carl in a minute.
So when Alan says that men take all the top jobs in driving and science, whilst women take the majority of till-based employment, we've kind of proved that to be incorrect.
Wrong.
100% of us working in the front line of retail.
There we go,
beg to differ. Also, on the subject of supermarkets and different sexes being able to do different jobs, I was told in my supermarket job that women were not allowed to push trolleys in case they were, and I quote, pregnant and didn't know it.
Wow.
Genuine. That's what I was told. I don't know if it's true.
Wow.
I wouldn't want to speculate. Alan introduces himself to the manager, immediately gets his name wrong. Doesn't he call him David? But he says, no, he calls him Paul.
Paul.
And then the guy says, oh, my name's David. And then he introduces the guy as saying, this is the manager, David Paul. Is that the manager's real name?
He's blagged that, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's definitely blagged it.
We'll never know.
So Alan's then on the tills. The first customer he serves is buying 16 beers, a litre of vodka and some eggs.
That is a classic weekly shop.
His first bit of banter with that customer is, have you checked your eggs? Yeah. Just a bit of chicken shit, but we all follow through once in a while, don't we? He's got that patter down.
Yep.
So Alan is brilliant at scanning. Have we found Alan's true calling? Sorry, has he found his true calling here?
I think quite possibly.
Scanning is not hard, though. He kind of suggests that he enters some kind of zen-like state as if it's really hard.
Yeah,
we've all done it.
To use his words, he says he enters a form of hyper-concentration.
He also
you're
questions whether he, as a man, could pass muster or scan mustard.
Yeah.
And he refers to the female part of his brain.
Yes.
I wasn't sure, but I did check, and there is no female part of the brain. Apparently, they're all the same.
You had to check.
Google it to be sure. Yeah. And then you get this kind of montage of him successfully working the tills, and I thought, Coogan basically slips into Pauline Calf here. I thought, it goes a bit out of Alan for me.
There's also an interesting little video on YouTube that was commissioned by Tesco about him being on the show, which is well worth a watch. It's about 3 minutes long. The main part of it is that the store manager doesn't seem to understand that it was a programme being filmed, and he basically is reviewing Alan as if he's an employee.
Amazing.
They're like, oh, how's it been having Steve Coogan in the store today? He's like, oh yeah, you know, Steve's been very helpful. He's very good at packing the show. He's been very very friendly to all the customers.
It's almost like he thought it was some kind of secret millionaire type programme.
He's not on a trial for a shift. He doesn't want to work Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he does.
Well, the whole thing's a bit of a farce. I mean, Alan feels the need to kind of do a basic check of the store and confirms that it's well ventilated and there's almost no chance of the workers getting lung disease like that blighted miners. It's like, come on.
He also claims of the scanning that some said he was scanning faster than Tesco lifer Pat Bevan. Pat could barely conceal her rage. Made extra funny by the fact that Pat looks like the cuddliest woman I've ever seen in my whole life.
Completely
doesn't give a shit.
Rewatching as well, where there is one customer, you see him scanning all of her stuff and he is just piling up at the end. She can't keep up.
Yeah, that's no use to anyone. That's just going to cause big delays,
isn't
it? And
then he just says, just take your time.
Okay, we must get on. But before he leaves Tesco, he discovers Carl, who is the man outside pushing the trolleys, who he describes as having a quiet dignity. And yeah, he says, what was his name? I'd never know. One shot later, he says, I later found out his name was Carl. Carls are everywhere, says Alan. They keep us clothed, safe, Gregs'd.
I have some Carl facts. Carl was the 616th most popular boy's name in 2016. Out of interest, Thomas, me and you, Tom, 6th. Adam, 39th. And Nick and Jed, our producer over there, those names were not in the top 100 boys' names in 2016.
Tough luck.
You're out of fashion, pal.
Or just not common, pal.
I just had a very quick note as well that in the montage where he talks about Carl. The last shot of that is a part of an L.S. Lowry painting, which links back to the Brian and Michael song Matchstick Men and Matchstick Cats and Dogs, which is over the montage when he's in the arcade shooting shitty zombies.
Nice bit of research.
Meta.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't really get the words out, but you got the general idea.
We got it. Okay. Alan next goes to investigate those payday lenders.
In Cheadle.
On the way there, Seldom the dog is angry because he can smell that Alan has a pepperami in the glove box.
Or as Alan calls them, peppery meat rods.
Peppery meat rods. I try to value Alan's Rover, as we always do on Monkey Tennis with all of Alan's cars, but the plates are fake for the first time ever, so We Buy Any Car had no information for me.
They heard our podcast and heard what we were doing.
Yeah.
They then cut to Alan struggling to contain Seldom and also presumably carrying a bag packed with his turds.
Yeah, there's definitely poop in there.
He heads to Cheadle to speak to somebody who's being circled by loan sharks, but speaks to her on condition of anonymity. That anonymity is blown before he even gets in the house. Did you see how?
Do you see her unpixelated at the front door?
But there's a shot of Alan parking on her road next to the street name. They then show the door number of the house. And then as the interview progresses, obviously...
Well, obviously later.
Yeah, they accidentally unpixelate her face in one shot.
And did you clock when he meets her at the front door, he goes to shake her hand and she doesn't accept it. She just turns her back to him.
I didn't see that.
And that happens more than once in this show as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. So he goes back and forth with her, ends up trying to outdo... She thinks payday lenders are scum. He tries to say, I think they're worse than that. I want to say sludge.
And then there's another hashtag.
Scum is the second hashtag there. There's an argument here that, like his programme pitch to Tony Hares back in I'm Alan Partridge, that this is Alan going Cook Report, arguably with a more slapstick approach, when he goes after the payday loans boss, played by John Thompson.
Yeah, I think that's him. Yeah, because he goes on to doorstep John Thompson and he's trying to do the Cook Report. He's trying to be Donald McIntyre or maybe Matt Allwright from Rogue Traders, maybe Dom Littlewood from Cowboy Builders. So my question to the group would be, who would you rather be doorstepped by?
Alan.
Alan, for sure, because all you need to say is, I quite like your radio show, and he backs down completely.
That's the plot twist here. Turns out that Kevin Ruddock, played by John Thompson, is actually a fan of his show. So question, is this the first fan of Alan's, genuine fan, that we've had since Jed Maxwell?
Jed Maxwell, the mentalist?
Yeah, I couldn't think of anyone else.
Alan has two fans.
He's got two listeners and then a few mentalists that phone in as well, basically.
And so, as soon as the payday loans guy admits that he listens to Alan's show, Alan suddenly backs down, becomes a bit of a wimp, and the whole thing is something of a damp squib. He then goes on, he's obviously seen a lot of the haven'ts or have-nots. He then goes on to see one of the haves going to a stately manor in the little-known county of Lancashire.
Yeah.
He seems very happy to have worked in a reason to go and pamper himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, and, again, to use Alan's words, he leaves the grim desperation of Manchester to go to Hogarth Hall.
Hogarth Hall, the kind of home, he says, that would make Julian Fellowes cream himself.
And I thought, did they basically put this in just so Coogan can drive a vintage car really fast?
I was wondering that, because over the course of this episode he drives three different cars, and I did think, is this something Alan would have demanded, or is this actually a Coogan thing? Because we know Coogan is a massive auto fan.
Yeah, although I feel like, I guess Steve and Alan are both kind of into their cars, maybe. Yeah. So
He then says that he makes reference to, in remote areas, cousins and brothers are the same thing, and that's the tragedy. Something of a callback to his run-in with the farmers in I'm Alan Partridge, where he accuses them of all sorts.
Yeah, yeah, good spot. Yeah.
And during this exchange, he finds a Malteser in his pocket and comments that this was a rented jacket, and then just pops it in his mouth. So, would you guys eat anything that you found in the jacket of a in the pocket of a hired jacket?
Not rented.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
I wouldn't, but I did once buy a second-hand suit and find a bag of pills in the pocket.
Hang on a minute. What kind of pills?
Ecstasy pellets.
I don't know. I flushed them to stay on the right side of the law. There was also a stack of business cards in there, but I resisted the opportunity to carry out identity theft.
Okay, so before we carry on any further with that, we should say that Alan and Seldom go exploring around the grounds.
Yeah.
However, Alan lets Seldom off the lead, and something bad happens with one of the sheep.
I think he devours a sheep, doesn't he?
He runs off screen to absolutely decimate a sheep nearby.
Let him have it.
Alan basically has to say, yeah, you have to let him eat it.
I thought to myself, fuck, he's got one.
Yes, you do, yeah. I thought to myself, if only he'd not been so stingy with the pepperamis in the first place, Sheldon maybe wouldn't have gone off to eat a sheep.
Very good point. Didn't think of that.
Next up, Alan is after gangs. He's trying to set up a meeting with a gang. He's back in the car first, and Seldom has farted. We already know he only eats boiled eggs and the odd bit of sheep and pepperamis when allowed. You can only imagine what that stench is like.
Did anybody make a note of what Alan actually says to Seldom here? Because it's just underneath the voiceover. He says, "Seldom, have you let off? Oh, you dirty bastard. You've made my eyes water. It's acidic." So I think that's we can learn from that. Don't just feed your dog boiled eggs.
Yeah. Awful. He says he's off to meet a group of youths, or as he says, a group of people always claiming victimhood, like young mums in a coffee shop.
No group he won't offend.
Yeah, and did we enjoy the hashtag reconstruction Alan has here of trying to track down a street gang?
Is this the nerve centre that's below street level?
10 feet underground.
Yeah, that's a basement, isn't it? It's just a basement.
Yeah. And he says he sends out a series of calls, texts, emails and Snapchats. And then I also enjoyed you can see him on the phone mouthing, fuck off and fuck you then.
Yeah, and receiving a call from the fixer. And then you see him writing a text that says, "Rendezvous Chicken Cottage, capitals, no guns."
Did you also spot there's a whiteboard in the room? And
no.
There are some gang names on the board. I could only make out three, which were Bastard Boys, Billies and Numbskulls.
Brilliant. He goes off to meet the gang. He's wearing a stab vest. It's 7 p.m. There's some gang facts come up on the screen. The gang has no name, 5 members, and their skill is fast texting. He tries to bribe them by throwing 200 cigarettes down and 10 chocolate cigarettes because he believes one of the gang is under 16.
Don't you overhear that he's talking to them about Kevin Costner for some reason as well?
I can understand where that came from.
Well, I think that's just him being out of touch, thinking that's an actor that kids would care about.
He thinks Kevin Costner is a valid reference point for 16-year-old kids.
He's got it very wrong.
To be fair, these kids are pretty, rowdy characters that you wouldn't want to mess with.
Were you scared just watching it?
Well, some of their crimes include bike theft, fighting, loud ball sports and backchat to constables, which I would never do.
Yeah, I'm quite scared, actually, just thinking about it. Yeah.
Later on, the gang splinters when one goes to buy oven chips, but as Alan says, was it McCain or cocaine?
They wouldn't say.
Yeah. Eventually, he wins their trust by pulling a U and a J turn in his hot hatch, which is now the third car of the show.
Actually, quite impressive manoeuvres.
I think, again, that's that thing of, is this Coogan just wanting
showing
to
have
off. A go at driving around
in
the car park?
Yeah, I mean, that's him definitely doing the move, unless they CGI'd his face in. So that's real Coogan driving, yeah.
He then tries to encourage them to participate in a group exercise called Speak Ball, where he throws the ball...
No, Adam, to give it his full title, it's the Alan Partridge Speak Ball System.
Oh, that's right, sorry. copyright/trademark. Yep. Which is basically where you throw a ball and you can only reply or speak if you're holding the ball. I tried to buy the domain name for Speakball so we could give it away today, but unfortunately it's already been taken. It's a gala event for mental health charity Mind taking place at the Hallmark Hotel in Handworth on September the 9th.
Sounds
so I thought
worthy.
I'd give a shout out and leave it at that.
Yeah. And I did just make a note here that basically the kids get bored of Speakball. They throw the ball at his head when he's not looking. He's delivering a piece to camera and it looks genuinely painful.
Yeah, it looks like he's a bit pissed off with that.
Yep.
He's off to a house party then with them, where he gets so spooked he tries to drink a beer with the lid on, and he's picked up an ecstasy pellet, which he's bought for the knockdown price of £75.
Yeah, they've told him that they normally retail for £120 each.
He also makes a reference to a number of people whose lives have been, and I quote, ruined by drugs, from Alid Jones to Zamo from Grange Hill, fictitious, to Lynn, his assistant's nephew Tim.
Yeah.
Is this the first we know about Lynn having a brother or sister?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
That is crucial intel. He then obviously he takes his one pill, strips to his vest.
No.
Just
he nibbles a corner.
Oh, nibbles a corner. Sorry. Yeah, strips to his vest, and the next morning he's got a meeting with the mayor. Possibly in the worst condition he's been since he pierced his foot on a spike.
Yeah, it's worth just clarifying before that he says in the voiceover he felt a bit hot and couldn't stop talking about Lewis Hamilton, but apart from that he was fine.
It was just a mild high.
Yeah, but he was on the dance floor till 8 a.m.
Yeah.
And yeah, the meeting with the mayor was at 10 a.m.
It's fair to say that the meeting with the mayor doesn't go too smoothly.
Definitely not.
But thanks to a little bit of editing, he thinks he's got away with it, but of course, he really hasn't.
This is very similar to the Welcome to the Places of My Life bit when he's in the swimming pool and he can't keep afloat.
Yeah. Yeah, they've just added on some re-recorded voiceover. They've added in laughter. And I also enjoyed, he's got a glass of water on the table, like we do here, but then he's also got a large bottle that he's just chugging from directly.
Also, with the mayor, at the very end, he gives probably one of the weakest handshakes he's ever done. I'll give a brief demonstration with Tom Dark now. Sort of like that.
That was very weak. I did not enjoy that.
Next up, he goes to meet Joel, who is a freegan, scavenging food out of bins and such. And he opens with a very good question. Which is your favourite bank? High Street, investment, sand or sperm?
Do we have to answer that?
I'm not answering that one.
No.
Bank.
High Street Bank?
High Street Bank.
I use one. So.
And did you say sand bank?
Yeah.
No, sperm bank. Yeah. High Street Investment,
High Street
sperm
invest-
and food.
High Street Investment, sand or sperm. And then he says, but who's heard of a food bank?
So I was right.
Mm. You were right for once.
He also very quickly, he does this a lot when he's interviewing people, he doesn't really understand their motives. He tries to think of something in his own history that he can tie it to. So in this case, he decides that this man is essentially a modern day Womble.
Yeah. And it's also when he's comes to the Freegan's house, Joel. He also doesn't shake his hand at the front door. Very consistent.
Yeah, and he kind of suggests that Joel is basically a tramp, were it not for his modest kind of middle-class home.
Nothing in the house is brand new, though.
No, and there was a TV that was quite small.
And then one of my favourite bits of the episode comes up where Alan effectively tests what the man would eat, what the freegan would be prepared to eat.
I feel like there's someone on this group of people that would eat more than most, and I'm confident if I asked these two, they'd also point to the same person.
I don't know what you guys
mean. For the benefit
mean.
Of those listening to the podcast, we're pointing at Adam.
Have we got a list of all the things?
Of course I've got a list of all
the
things.
Please go through them.
Can I ask them to Adam? Because I feel like Adam is... We have more time for everyone. It's to Adam. So, Adam, would you eat or would you consume an egg mayonnaise sandwich still in its wrapping?
No, but only because I don't like egg mayonnaise.
Okay.
That's the only reason.
Would have done otherwise. Would do otherwise.
A plastic bottle of Iron Brew.
Yes,
but the top has been chewed by a rat.
I wouldn't, but Joel says he would if the seal hasn't been broken.
An egg in a sock?
No, see my aforementioned answer, don't like egg.
An egg still in its shell, but it's from the 90s.
Yeah, probably, because I like Britpop.
Okay. Condom full of grapes.
It's a hard pass on the condom
you
full of grapes.
You absolutely would, you're lying.
We know you better than you know yourself.
Sick bastards. So him, Alan and Joel then go off on a scavenge. There's echoes of when he goes off with Michael to steal a traffic cone in Iron Man Partridge.
Yeah.
And he claims they're using the same SAS cameras they used when they assassinated Osama bin Laden. And he's hoping to find a bin Laden with food. He has mispronounced bin Laden on purpose to make that joke work.
Just to make that fit, yeah. I really like the bit when they're about to do the dumpster dive, when he goes off on one, and Joel says to him, "When did this happen?" He says, "Oh, it's just a generic annoying man that lives inside my mind." And I thought that's back to the imagined Chris Rea barbecue incident in I'm Alan Partridge series one, isn't
waffling
it?
To himself.
Yeah, he's kind of come on, Lynn, let's leave. These people are starting to annoy me.
He regularly loses arguments with fictitious characters in his own
all
mind.
The time.
So what we're saying is that Alan's mental problems remain, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, we are saying that.
At the point that they get rumbled at the skip and the freegan legs it, you get this. We've got a shot behind us of part of Alan's point of view headcam escape. I wondered, question to the group, is his headcam escape better than his Jed Maxwell escape?
Very different. One's very quick, so this one lasts a whole weekend.
Yeah, he's locked in for a whole weekend.
It's the slowest escape in world history.
Well, I don't think he does escape, does he? He just stays there until they open it.
Until they let him out, yeah. That's not really an escape, is it? It doesn't really count.
He's very scared of security guards, which he says have a chip on their shoulder and no qualifications. Quite a combo.
Again, insulting people that he said he's trying to learn from his mistakes, but it's evident that he really hasn't.
Yeah, I think, as I'm sure we'll, in summary in a bit, like, I think that's the whole thing about this journey of redemption. direction that he wants to go on. Alan thinks he's a man of the people, but he's essentially shit scared of anyone from the working class or anyone that's capable of manual labour.
Alan will never change.
No.
So at this point, he is trapped in the warehouse, and he thinks he sees someone outside and starts shouting at them, saying, "Man, Chav man, fat boy." But it turns out it's just a cardboard cutout of a Nolan sister carrying some Activia, which made me wonder, question to the group, have you ever mistaken something that is not a person for a person?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
I think you have, haven't you, Adam?
Well, my wife had a particularly good story where she was in H&M once, and a woman came down off the escalator, bumped into her reflection outside a changing room, and then apologised to herself.
That is amazing.
That really happened.
So to be confirmed, your wife did that, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
My wife knows someone.
Yeah. Still a good story, though.
Alan kind of drops a Tinder bombshell as well, that he's on Tinder.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think at this point he admits that, I think in the timeline, he had been going out with the lady that he meets in Alpha Papa, hasn't he, through the start of...
But at
this point that relationship is over and he's back on Tinder, but complaining at this point that the GoPro has made him look grotesque. Put this on my Tinder profile and it'll be a barren few months indeed, he says. I also like that he's a big fan of very cheesy graphics, and you can see that he's put an edit in here where he actually, the graphics swipe his
swipes
picture
off.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. He starts wistfully looking back on his marriage to Carol. It's 2:59 now. He's still trapped in the warehouse. he says, like Carol, the warehouse has become incredibly cold and unloving. And I thought, was the warehouse ever loving?
Very good point.
He's stretched that metaphor a bit, isn't he?
And then he, to keep himself warm, he he dresses in a classic bubble wrap double gown and cowl, as you can see on the picture behind us there.
Very classy.
And which also, he then later... sees himself on the CCTV footage and thinks it's a ghost stalking the warehouse.
He describes himself as the love child of the honey monster and a demented Scottish witch.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Which, to be fair, is quite accurate.
And then there's another hashtag that goes with that, hashtag honey widow.
Yep.
Again, which I think is kind of perfect. He's trying to keep up with the times with his latest production
show, hashtags are brilliant.
But the hashtags don't make any sense. It doesn't work.
Why didn't he just use his mobile when he was stuck in here?
Oh, good point.
Yeah,
I really don't know.
Continuity bombshell there, I think.
Yeah.
So he's trapped in the warehouse in total for 51 hours because it's closed at weekends. Eventually, when somebody comes through, he's borderline delirious. He rolls around in the bubble wrap you can see here and thinks that it's someone opening fire on him. Although, to be fair, that is post-Alpha Papa, so he has been involved in shootouts before.
So he might have post-traumatic stress disorder, basically.
Yep. And so that kind of brings us towards the end of the episode.
But there is a great payoff to that scene, though, when you discover he's actually naked under the bubble wrap.
Why? So at this point, he's pleading with us that the journey has been meaningful, basically, saying it was time for me to become a better man. He says he's going to apologise to Marvin, who was there at the very beginning.
Although he can't remember Marvin's name, it has to be told by somebody off camera.
Yep. And I believe Nick's got the transcript of his apology to Marvin, who he accused of being a shit.
Well, yeah, I mean, so Alan basically invites Marvin to come into the studio where he's going to read the apology, where he says, "I, Alan Partridge of Sound Mind, do humbly state that I'm sorry if you felt offended or were offended. I was under a lot of pressure at the time." Was he? Because the woman I loved had decided she no longer felt similarly to me. Nevertheless, I was wrong to imply that you had feelings for sheep and that you did give physical expression to those feelings through ovine congress. That is a term you do not hear much.
No.
I also regret shoving you in the car park.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Slips in that he'd assaulted him as well.
Yep.
calling you a chav, a horrible pejorative term that should be consigned to the museum of no longer acceptable words.
And how does Marvin respond to this apology?
He just sends him an emoji of a sheep.
Yep, yes, he does. So then, obviously, Alan immediately rescinds the apology, and in the voiceover, he then says, just because one disadvantaged teenager wanted to act the prick, it doesn't mean I couldn't reach out to others. So he takes a ragtag group of people hiking with him. They don't seem to care. One of them, Darren, refuses to wear high vis. Their names are Gavin, Mark, Riley, Darren, and another Gavin. He tries to espouse the benefits of Bovril, beef tea, hot salt drinks, he describes them as.
It's actually genuinely very nice.
It is, I concur.
Far too salty.
It pretty much ends with them throwing him off a jetty. He claims he's relaxed, but he looks like he's shitting himself.
They love him that bit as well.
And he claims that he's looking back over what, by any measure, had been an incredible journey. He said, whilst you're not going to convince everyone, it was clear I'd achieved genuine redemption. So, question to the group, has Alan achieved genuine redemption?
Absolutely not.
No.
He's learnt nothing, I would say.
Not for a second.
That's always what it's been about. It's just a way for him to wangle a documentary out of it and hopefully get more work, essentially.
Do you think he did become a better, more sought-after broadcaster as a result of this?
Again, no.
I find that unlikely.
Well, we don't know. It's not the end of Alan.
Oh, as we know, he's going to be back on the BBC next year.
So in theory, this is kind of taking him places.
So maybe he has.
So in the fictional Alan world, you're suggesting current BBC commissioners saw this documentary last year and thought, yes, we want him back for a chat show.
It's a stretch, but yes.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of Scissored Isle, and we are sadly out of time. But thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, we'll just have a brief attempt at the theme song between us after three. One, two, three.
Alan Partridge, Scissored Isle.
Thank you very much, Cotton. Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone.
Guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
So there we go. As we were hurried off stage in Manchester, that was the end of our live Scissored Isle special. But we've decided there are all kinds of tidbits that we need to communicate to the Partridge audience. So join us next week for part two of our Scissored Isle special. We'd also like to quickly mention our London live show. It's coming up on November the 25th at London's Prince Charles Cinema, and we'll be tackling Knowing Me, Knowing Yule, and speaking to live guest Simon Greenall, who most of you will know as Michael the Geordie. You can join us by picking up tickets at postpoppodcast.com/monkeytennis. And we hope to see you there. That's it for us this week. If you'd like to get in touch at all, it's thepartridgepod@gmail.com, twitter.com/thepartridgepod, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, and
we have a brand new social media account, guys. It's very exciting, but it's not fully consistent with the other with the other media.
Our social media branding has gone to absolute shit.
We are also now on Instagram at monkeytennispod.
So please join us there, and please join us next week for part two of the Scissored Isle special. Thanks and goodbye.
Monkey tennis?
One Partridge, Scissored Isle.
Monkey tennis?
You're unpacking.
This is an ecstasy pellet.
Google it! Monkey tennis?
Basically, beef tea.
Monkey tennis?
For what is a trolley money but a shepherd of the town?
Monkey tennis?
A better, more sought-after broadcaster. Seldom a pedigree chump. Although he only eats boiled eggs.
Monkey tennis?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.